the Power Pack Morning Zoo. Are you kidding me?
Fire!
It's the greatest radio show ever.
Good morning and welcome.
Dan Mickley.
Oh my God, he's from Chicago. That's amazing.
Vince Marotta.
Oh my, who's better than Vince?
Sarah Cazell. And Jared Carlin. It can only be
Sarah. Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Mickley and Marotta mornings.
Shout out to Dan Mickley, my boy. Him and Vince. Okay.
Happy Tuesday, wake up Valley sports fans. How are we all doing today? The crew is up bright and early and the sun is actually out already.
Oh, it's that time of the year.
It is that time of the year. You can tell it, things are changing. Right?
Not for the better.
This is one of Jared's pet. This is what every year he's fascinated by how it gets lighter earlier and then darker later. And
it's true. It's horrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Usually you would think you wouldn't like it when it's dark more, but lighter earlier, lighter longer means hotter all the time.
That is true.
I don't know if any of you have looked at the upcoming forecast for this week. This weekend it is supposed to be 100 degrees.
Okay, I'm going to tell you something. I'm weird this way because it is so expensive to golf. I'm actually looking forward to these foreboding temperatures so I can get back to my fixation.
You'll make up for your on your electric bill.
That's right.
I'm obviously not affected by the high greens fees in the golf world, but I was talking to a buddy who golfs a lot, and he told me, he's like, yeah, I'm going golfing Saturday with a couple buddies of mine. I was like, oh, where are you playing? And he told me, and it was a course that I used to live right by. It's a municipal course. I played there when I was a teenager. Mm-hmm. It's terrible. I'm like, what are they charging these days for that place? It's like $60. It's awful.
Well, listen, you try to get on even to a relatively good course, and it is upwards of $180 around, $200-$300. I was told this year, the tourists, you can't charge them enough. They will pay whatever you are asking for.
Isn't that crazy?
Literally, I talk to dudes in pro shops all the time. They tell me the same thing. These out-of-towners, they come in. They're like Al Chervik in Caddyshack. They're like Rodney Dangerfield. Give me a box of those, three of those, one of those.
That's
the worst looking hat I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, it's a restricted place, so don't tell them you're Jewish.
Don't tell them you're Jewish.
All right, well,
but this really happens.
You got a bowl of soup.
That's right. These tourists come in and they buy their gear, their shirts. They might even buy a new credit card at all.
Yeah.
So
should we all get into the golf course business? Is that what you're trying to say?
We missed our window.
We did.
We missed our window.
We did.
About 10 years ago, you could get a course for a song, Jared.
I'm just going to open up a
not
store
a,
that sells...
Not a Jared song. You need a better catalog song than that.
I'm going to open a store that sells nothing but white belts.
I just bought a white belt. I'm sure you did.
I'm not sure you're not going to play golf in it.
You bought a white belt. Oh, my goodness.
I can only imagine the ensemble that's going to be attached
to. Yeah, right, exactly.
Can't wait to see.
Yeah, can't wait for that debut.
He matches it with, yeah.
All right, we got a lot of ground to cover. Start the show, Ferret.
The Splash.
Splash.
The stories making waves in the sports world.
The Splash.
Cannonball. Cannonball coming.
The Splash, brought to you by Presidential Pools, Arizona's number one pool builder. See why at presidentialpools.com.
Cubs took the opener of a three-game series against the Diamondbacks at Chase Field. They went extra innings to do it. They win 3-2 in 11 innings. Nico Horner singled a right off Bryce Jarvis. In the 11th, scored Nick Madrigal with what turned out to be the winning run. D-backs went quietly in the bottom of the 11th. And they take the loss that sinks their record to sub-500 again at 8-9. Merrill Kelly pitched well in his latest start. High pitch count, but he allowed just one run on three hits and five innings of work. But the D-backs offense sputtered all night, producing just three hits and 2 of 11 with runners in scoring position. Three hits? Three damn hits? That's all we got? You can't say damn on the radio.
Oh, you just did.
Yeah, nobody's listening.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Merrill Kelly, he wasn't his dominant self. His production was fine.
Yes.
Threw a lot of pitches, only lasted five innings. It was a strange game. Disappointing game. Disappointing loss.
Very frustrating game to watch.
Indeed.
That series continues tonight at Chase Field. Tommy Henry on the mound for Arizona, being countered by Chicago's Kyle Hendricks. That game starts at 6:40. You can hear it here on Arizona Sports on 98.7 with pregame coverage starting at 6 o'clock. Suns will be like the most of the NBA world, sitting back and watching the Western Conference play-in tournament to determine the 7th and 8th seeds in the playoffs. They get rolling tonight. First 21st. It's the 7-8 matchup with the New Orleans Pelicans hosting the LA Lakers. That game at 4:30. The winner moves on to the big playoff bracket. They get to sit at the adult table and take on the second-seeded Denver Nuggets. The loser will play for their postseason lives on Friday against the winner of the second game, which features ninth-seeded Sacramento, hosting 10th-seeded Golden State at 7 o'clock. The loser of that game, home for the summer. 1-2-3 Cancun. Grayson Allen signed his 4-year contract extension with the Suns yesterday, a couple of weeks after becoming eligible to do so. Allen's deal worth $70 million to him, but it also puts the Suns deep into the luxury tax penalty. It's projected to be $104 million in taxes alone next year, which figures to be the highest in the league. Allen started 73 games for Phoenix, averaged a career-high 13.9 points per game, and led the league by shooting 46.1% from three-point range. By the way, the first ever Suns player to do that. I found that interesting.
That is interesting.
Oklahoma City Thunder head coach Mark Daigneault has been named the NBCA's NBA Coach of the Year. Daigneault led the Thunder to a 57-25 record and the top seed in the Western Conference, despite having the youngest roster in the league. They will play the eighth seed in the first round of the playoffs starting on Sunday. Reports out of Brooklyn say the Nets are ready to hire Jordy Fernandez as the team's next head coach. Fernandez currently an assistant with the Kings. That's of note locally because Suns assistant Kevin Young was one of the reported finalists for that job opening, as was former Bucks and Hawks head coach Mike Budenholzer. The Nets were wretched this year. They finished 32-50. They fired Jock Vaughn after 54 games. Kevin Ollie finished the season as the interim head coach. By the way, speaking of former Suns, and it ties into the Nets and another former Son that we'll get to. Mikal Bridges came out yesterday.
Yeah.
And kind of took blame for the way the season ended. Said I was not right mentally.
Yeah. Said he got worn down mentally.
Worn down mentally. Was not in the right mindset.
Yep.
Meanwhile, in Portland, the Blazers won, I don't know, 4 games this year, it seemed like. And DeAndre Ayton was spouting off about the second half. I really showed the type of player that I can be.
Oh,
and this
boy.
This is what I've been trying to show my entire career.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Yeah. Kind of feel bad about Mikal Bridges. I really think that Mikal is kind of getting in the Cal Ripken Jr. territory, where he might want to take a night off sometime next year just to kind of not let this happen anymore. These streaks take on a life of their own, man, and sometimes it's more important than anything.
Also, this is the first year he ever had to be the man on a team. And then that
night.
That hits differently.
Yep.
It does. It does. And he did it very well after the trade last year, but man, his numbers were way down.
Way down. Yeah. Didn't look like a number one this year, put it that way.
He did not, and the Nets didn't have anything close to a number one this year. But they played like number two.
Oh, hey!
This thing on.
Yeah.
The Arizona Cardinals opened their offseason program yesterday at Dignity Health Training Center in Tempe. Players taking part in phase one strength and conditioning. As players worked in the weight room, the front office still getting ready for the 2024 NFL draft, which starts next Thursday night in Detroit. According to NFL Network's Ian Rappaport, the Cardinals had a top 30 visit with Alabama edge rusher Dallas Turner. He's expected to meet with the Chargers today and tomorrow, which is the last day the top 30 visits can happen. Turner was tied for the SEC lead in sacks last season with 14. Probably going to be the first edge rusher off the board next Thursday. No surprise at all in the WNBA draft. The Indiana Fever took Iowa superstar Caitlin Clark with the first overall pick. Stanford forward Cameron Brink went second to the LA Spark. Chicago Sky picked South Carolina center Camilla Cardoso third. Angel Reese of LSU went to seventh overall, also to Chicago. The Mercury had 2 picks in the 3rd round. And if nothing else, they got 2 players with great
names.
The
coolest names.
Yes.
Charisma Osborne and Jazz Shelley.
It's fantastic.
So they got more charismatic.
So you can say that the Mercury both have charisma and jazz. Entering a couple of good traits. Right?
And hella 3-pointers.
Yes. And Cisse Lema of Ethiopia won the men's Boston Marathon on Monday in a time of 2 hours, 6 minutes, and 17 seconds.
What?
Imagine running 26 miles in 2 hours.
What?
That's the 10th fastest time ever recorded at the race. Helen Obiri of Kenya defended her title in the women's marathon in a time of 2 hours, 27 minutes, and 37 seconds.
Slowpoke.
There you go. There is your splash. For Tuesday, April 16th, coming up next, Suns with a little time to breathe before they have their first-round playoff matchup against the Minnesota Timberwolves. We'll get into some of that, some of the things they might be doing during the breathing period next. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Hey, it's Burnsy. The Phoenix Suns perhaps have the perfect first-round matchup in the Minnesota Timberwolves. Why is it the perfect matchup? And is it actually the perfect matchup? We'll tell you today on the Burns and Gambo Show, 2 to 6 on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
I don't know what to do with Phoenix right now. I don't know what to do because it looks like, based on everything we've seen, and it's not like some of these season series that you look at, you go, oh, wow, this team's won 3 out of 4. When's the last time they played? Oh, January 3rd. So you're like a lot of the Dallas stuff that you were looking at, although their projections were clearly against only the Clippers, but the way the seeding was working, there's just some of the season series stuff. You can look at the record, and then you've got to dig a little bit deeper to see who played, who didn't play. And then it's like, well, they haven't played each other in 3 months, but this is 2 games in 9 days. It's scary if you're Minnesota.
That's Ryan Russillo from the Bill Simmons podcast that was put down on Sunday right after the Suns beat the Minnesota Timberwolves in the regular season finale and beat them rather soundly, completing the season sweep. And now everybody's wondering, and you heard the look ahead promo from Dave Burns for the afternoon show today. Is it actually the perfect matchup? Well, damn it, it seems like it right now, doesn't it?
Sure does.
That was a great look ahead. He goes, the Suns have a perfect matchup. Why do they have a perfect matchup? Or do they even have a perfect matchup? It's got everything in it.
But that's the Suns, I think a lot of people. Look, I kind of feel like Ryan Russillo right now. What do you make of the Phoenix Suns? Mm-hmm. When you look at this matchup, and to his point, you know, you two meetings in the last 9 days of the season that the Suns won in very different ways. They won once with a dominating defensive performance and kind of sprinkled that in even on Sunday, but their offense was much more potent on Sunday. I went back after, you know, we were forwarded the numbers of Anthony Edwards and his lack of success against the Suns, and I went back to each individual game. They've won twice in Anthony Edwards' 12 games in his career against the Suns, 2-10, and Devin Booker didn't play in one of the games that Minnesota won.
Yeah, interesting.
I'll say it right now on paper, it is the perfect matchup. It means nothing when the ball is thrown up in the air on Saturday
night. No, I disagree with that. I think it does mean something. I think it most certainly does mean something when they throw the ball up Saturday night. I don't think the Timberwolves are going to feel comfortable until they actually beat this team. And there's they're under a ton of pressure to do that. Now, if they win game one Saturday, then maybe the mood changes. And then maybe it gets back to kind of feeling even. But I definitely think that this series is tilted in the Suns' favor. And I do think that what's happened is going to mean something in game one. These games have just not even been competitive. I mean, the Suns have blown this team out. They have never not led by more than double digits in the second half of any of those games.
In any of
so,
them. Yeah.
So it, there is definitely, this is definitely the best case scenario.
You've been talking about it for literally months.
Yes,
that this is the matchup you wanted.
Because I look at Minnesota's record and then I watch them play the Suns and it doesn't match up. They don't look like a good team when they play the Suns. And you know what else? They're still an emotional wreck. You saw that game Sunday. Anthony Edwards, for as great as he's been, lost his composure more than once. That team gets down. You get on top of that team. They're still very emotionally immature.
Yeah, he was called out specifically. John Krasinski writes for The Athletic, covers the Timberwolves in the Minnesota sports scene, and he used the phrase incessant whining or something very similar to describe Anthony Edwards in that game and kind of his whole season. But that's where it starts for me, for Minnesota, as we focus on the best player. Their best player is Anthony Edwards. And I said it on yesterday's show, if you only watched Anthony Edwards play against the Suns and people were telling you, oh, this guy's a superstar, you'd be like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
He's been especially terrible in the 3 games this year. I don't expect that to continue consistently. Now, the Suns, do they have the magic elixir to shutting down Anthony? It was a very strange performance by him because he only took 7 shots on Sunday, too, which I thought was odd.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, he's a very high-volume shooter. Do they have the formula to shut him down? You know, you only got to shut him down a few times to win the series. But I expect him to have one, two, maybe three games where he absolutely goes off in this series.
But he hasn't yet. Why do you expect that?
Because he's just too good a player. The averages are on his side. And the first time, and it's going all the way back to Anthony Edwards' rookie season, it was the second game ever against the Suns. They won that game. He scored 42, mm-hmm. and Karl Anthony Towns scored 41. So that's what they're capable of doing. Yeah. I don't know if Towns is capable right now because of the health.
Yeah.
The Suns have overlooked so many opponents this year, and they've been bitten by it so many times this year.
So that's more of your fear. Your fear is more that the Suns are going to go into this thing thinking they're all that and fall into some bad habits here.
It would be
I'm not saying that will happen, but yes, that is a fear of mine because of what we've seen.
Well, it's very fair.
The perfect fitting end to this season would be the Suns getting out of the play-in, getting the matchup that everybody wanted, and then losing anyway to the team in the series. They've just underachieved so much, mm-hmm. and it's been such a roller coaster season. And every game you thought they were going to win, they lost and lose and win and stuff like that.
Well, that ties into that ongoing narrative where the fans had begun to resent this basketball team not for a lack of success, because you look at the record, there's nothing wrong with 49-33.
It's a good record.
It's a good record, mm-hmm. right? You're 16 games over 500, one game less than the Dallas Mavericks. People look at the Mavericks and go, oh, boy, did they come on. Yeah. What a great year for them.
Like we said,
one victory less.
They'd be third in the East or something,
It's the toying with our emotions. That's what's made people feel certain ways about this basketball team. Like, okay, one week you're proven to us that you are really capable of this, and the next week you look like you don't even want to be in a basketball court.
No, it's true. I mean, ask yourself, as somebody who follows the team, and everybody's going to have a different answer, but how many times have you been out on this team this year?
Yeah.
I was out last week. Mm-hmm. They fall behind by 31 points in the first quarter to the Clippers, and then the next night against the Clippers C team. Yep. Had to struggle for a win.
Indeed.
They looked like a team that was not interested in competing, and then all of a sudden they turned it back on.
And the books comment, the chilling, that put everything over the top. That put everything over the top. That put us on red alert.
That just happened.
And it just happened. Right. And this is where Bradley Beal really, you cannot overstate what he's given this basketball team down the stretch here. Because he's making us all feel good about this team again. Granted, with some caveats and some hesitancy and some trepidation. What's weird, though, again, this matchup, you talk about a one-sided favorable matchup. The Suns' point differential against Minnesota this year was plus 15.7. The next best team against the Timberwolves was the Bulls at plus 7. So they were more than double the point differential against the next nearest team that matches up well against Minnesota.
That's crazy. And I looked at Edwards' number. I mean, it was like minus 40-something combined, maybe it was minus 60 combined in the three games. It's just odd numbers. Bradley Beal was a subject on the Bill Simmons, Ryan Russillo podcast, too. Bill Simmons applauding what Beal's been doing.
Beal, over the last five games, it really jumped out in the Sacramento game, which I thought was a great win for them. And then this game, too. Beal was just awesome. Like, he looked like, I don't know, a cross between 2017 playoffs Bradley Beal and then kind of near the end of the Wizards before it went sideways Beal. But we haven't seen that version of him at all. And this was, the game today was the first time I felt like it was the three of them and not just KD and Booker kind of with Beal. And I wasn't expecting that. I didn't know if he had this in him.
Yeah, we all kind of wondered if Bradley Beal still had this in him.
But
man, he's even taken it to a different level. The way he played in that fourth quarter in Sacramento was something else, and then all day on Sunday.
Listen, and I know a lot of national analysts who've gone heavy in against the Suns are having a hard time kind of reconciling what we're watching now and the idea. But I think Bill Simmons was right. The level at which Bradley Beal performed for most of the year was good, but there was a lot of deferring. There was a lot of giving of himself, and it didn't feel like a super team. I agreed with Bill Simmons about that, but that's changed. You know, that with the Bradley Beal we've seen in the last two games and even extending beyond that really does make this team feel like it's got super team potential. I mean, he's been that good. As I said yesterday, on a Sunday in a game they lost, he was tasked with guarding Zion. And then a week later, he's shutting down Anthony Edwards. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, for a guy who's not known for his defense.
It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, he's definitely ratcheted it up. Enter to win an exclusive NFL draft experience. Just text the word draft to 620-620 to enter for the chance to win a reserve table and $200 in food and beverage credit at Flanker's Kitchen and Sports Bar inside the BetMGM Sportsbook, all while having a front row seat at Arizona Sports live broadcast as we await the Cardinals' first pick. Once again, that's draft to 620-620 right now. Coming up next, tough one for the D-backs last night, frustrating one as well. We'll relive the frustration in D-backs daily. Next, it's Bickley and Murata Mornings here on this Tuesday. Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
The home of Arizona Diamondbacks baseball.
D-backs daily.
D-backs welcoming the Cubs to town for the first of three at Chase Field. We got ourselves a good old-fashioned pitcher's duel. The fun started in the top of the second inning with Michael Busch leading off against D-backs starter Merrill Kelly.
Here's the 0-2. Swinging a high drive, deep right center field, going back McCarthy, and this one is into the pool. Five straight, right on cue by Busch. This guy is on a tear, and it's 1-0 Chicago.
That's Chris Garagiola on the call. Five straight meaning Busch is now homered in five straight games. 419 feet on that blast. That ties a Cubs record. And I was listening to the broadcast, and he and Tom Candiotti were going back and forth before that pitch, and right on cue, they talked about, hey, if the Diamondbacks are up big and he gets a solo home run later to extend the streak, that's cool. Hit the next pitch out.
Yeah. Yeah, he is on quite a heater.
Yeah.
For a young player. That's, yeah, crazy.
1-0 Cubs at that point. D-backs would get on the board in their half of the second. Christian Walker drew a base on balls from Cubs starter Ben Brown to lead things off. Brown would get Jock Peterson to pop up to short, then gave a backward K to Eugenio Suarez. Gabby Moreno drew a five-pitch walk, which brought up Jake McCarthy with runners on first and second.
Now the pitch. Base hit center field. Walker rounding third, and he is going to score. On his way to third, Moreno, and McCarthy ties the game with a clutch two-out knock.
Yeah, 1-1 at that point. Scoreboard operator would spend some time to breathe himself. Wouldn't have to change the scoreboard for a while. In the bottom of the eighth, Drew Smyly on in relief for the Cubs. Randall Grichuk delivered a one-out double for just the second Arizona hit of the game. Kevin Newman went down on strikes. The Cubs intentionally walked Ketel Marte to get to Corbin Carroll, who was hitting .359 against lefties on the season, and that average only went up.
Two balls, two strikes. Here it is. Swing, line drive, base hit right field. Grichuk scores. To third goes Marte, and it's 2-1 Diamondbacks.
Yeah, 2-1 D-backs, three outs away from the victory.
Yeah.
Who are you going to call?
Oh, the Gink.
The Gink.
How'd he do, Vinny?
He got Garrett Cooper to ground out to short to lead things off. Then he allowed a one-out single to Nico Horner. Then a single to Mike Tauchman. He struck out pinch hitter Miles Mastrobone.
Hey!
For the second out. And that brought up leadoff man Ian Happ with runners on first and second. And he would not even have to swing the bat to tie things up.
Uh-oh.
The 0-1. In the dirt, it skips away from Moreno to the right. And now rounding third, trying to score is Horner. The throw to the plate is not in time. Cubs tie it on a wild pitch.
Yeah.
I did not expect that in any way, shape, or form. That was literally a sucker punch, but it was spectacular base running from Nico Horner.
It was.
Spectacular.
Last to recognize
that Gabby Moreno could not locate that baseball.
Last night he was...
the stink!
He did wiggle out of the rest of the ninth, so he would go to extra innings. Diamondbacks went quietly in their half of the extra innings, or the ninth, I should say. Bryce Jarvis on to start the 10th. Runners on the corners, one out, and Jarvis was able to dial up one of pitcher's best friends.
1-1 from Jarvis. Swung on, grounded to short. Newman, they're going to turn two. The throw to second for one. The turn in time. Inning-ending double play. And the Cubs don't score. Oh, that's how you draw it up, Jarvis.
Bottom of the 10th, D-backs with their chance. Runners at first and second after a Gabby Moreno walk, but Grichuk, Newman, and Marte could not deliver. Grichuk's at bat especially was in the top of the 11th. Busch walked, Cooper single to load the bases for that Nico Horner
guy. The man's
a
menace.
And another 1-2 is hit into right field, a base hit. Grichuk coming in, gloves. He will hit the cutoff man. One run scores. But it's now 3-2 Chicago, and still nobody out.
Yeah, Gerard.
That pitch that Nico Horner hit was at his shoulders.
Yes, and
the Cubs broadcaster. Yeah, after he slapped it to right field, the Cubs broadcaster said, "Smash the pinata and drive in a run."
The only thing missing was the blindfold
right,
and the candy.
That's right.
Jarvis would keep the deficit at one. He retired Talkman Yan Gomes in half in succession, the last two being strikeouts. D-backs would start the 11th with Marte on second. Carroll grounded out. That pushed Cattell up 90 feet to third. Lourdes Gurriel Jr. flied out to right, but not deep enough for Marte to tag. So two outs. That left things up to Christian Walker to face Keegan Thompson, longtime SNL cast member, now Cubs reliever.
And here's the pitch. Check swing. Did he go? Yes, he did on appeal. And the ball game is over. Cubs win it by a final score of 3-2.
That was a tough one last night. Only three hits in the game for the Diamondbacks.
Yeah, the offense was, and they were facing a young kid who they shouldn't have struggled with as much as they did. Now, Ben Brown's a good pitcher, but he's got two pitches. And it's fastballs and it's knuckle curves. And I was just disappointed that the offense could not get some traction for Merrill Kelly. You see this sometimes when you have a pitcher who's dialed in like Zach Allen or Merrill Kelly. Sometimes offenses don't just think, hey, we don't have to do much.
Yeah.
Right? I was just highly disappointed to not close the game out when they had the opportunity and to not plate that run at the end with Lourdes Gurriel Jr. and Christian Walker up. That's a fail.
Yeah. The gink on his wild pitch.
You know, I think leading up to that, I feel terrible for not getting out of that spot. It shouldn't have come to that. But, you know, that's baseball. I it's just kind of a weird play. I just bounced off Gabby on a weird spot and went to, you know, the furthest spot from the plate. So I was almost debating going and running and getting it. So it was just a weird play, and I feel terrible.
Yeah, I think on the replay, it looked like it just ricocheted off Moreno's wrist, and it traveled far.
Oh,
like,
it did.
That
it
had,
boinked.
And Moreno got up to chase and immediately started shaking the wrist, and you're like, oh no, here we go again.
You're right.
It was a weird play. And then the Diamondbacks got desperate. They used the challenge there. It was clearly, he was clearly safe.
Well, and there's a great shot of Horner coming in from the third base side when he head first slides into home plate. The amount of Cub fans over there on that first base side who stand up and celebrate, it's a jarring visual. Now, listen, I'm not saying anything. The crowd's been great so far. I'm not going down that path, but it was one of those visuals that sort of, okay, we've seen this before. Just disappointing, right? Merrill Kelly wasn't great. He was certainly good enough.
Yeah, I mean, and we talked about that with the schedule being what it is in the first month and these teams visiting Chase Field. Hey, there's going to be a ton of opposing fans in these series. And you learn to accept that as a Diamondbacks fan, but you don't want them to be able to celebrate.
That's the worst part. It could be worse. In fact, they're just showing the highlight right now. You could be the Rockies who pinch ran Kyle Freeland last night. He runs and breaks his arm.
Did you see the highlight?
So you use your best pitcher to pinch run. He goes, gets thrown out, and slides. Oh, my arm, it's broken.
Yeah, well.
Brutal. It's brutal. So whatever.
Rockies baseball.
So the Diamondbacks are back under 500, but you can tell they're close.
Tommy Henry on the mound today. Kyle Hendricks going for the Cubs. 6:40 first pitch in game two of that 3-game series. You can hear it here. Starting with pregame coverage at 6 on Arizona Sports on 98.7 and the Arizona Sports
and
app.
Also the Dodgers, Giants, and Padres are all also starting off pretty mediocre this year. So the division is still right there.
I flipped on the Dodgers game last night. Chris Taylor had a sack fly RBI, but he's hitting .031 this year.
Whoops.
That's a hard average to accomplish.
That's like one hit.
Yes. Yeah. No, this is it's really weird because we talk about Corbin Carroll struggles. Cody Bellinger, right after that great year last year, looks like he's back in his own head. He's changed up his batting stance. Mm-hmm. He's having a hard time barreling it up. Yeah, it's a weird start to Major League Baseball. Astros are terrible. Yeah, it's been kind of a weird beginning here.
Yes, it has. You can text your thoughts to the FanDuel text line at 620-620 right now. It's always open. Coming up next, Caitlin Clark's time in the WNBA is technically underway. She was drafted number one overall, and a lot of people talking about a league that has been neglected for a long time. We'll get into it next. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Hey, it's Wolf. If the Phoenix Suns are going to make a deep playoff run, who's going to need to step up? We'll tell you at 10 a.m. It's Wolf and Luke on Arizona Sports.
With the first pick in the 2024 WNBA Draft, the Indiana Fever select Caitlin Clark, University of Iowa.
I got a little anxious there before the pick, but I think more than anything, just grateful and lucky to have my family here, my friends over there, coaches up here. So I think just enjoying the moment. Like you said, like I've dreamed of this moment since I was in second grade, and it's taken a lot of hard work, a lot of ups and downs, but more than anything, just trying to soak it in.
Yeah, it became official last night. Called it yesterday the worst kept secret in sports, the Indiana Fever with the number one pick, select Caitlin Clark, who I'm not saying she's got the whole weight of the league on her shoulders, but man, it's starting to feel like that, doesn't it?
I think what's happened is this is sort of like the NBA version of LeBron, where you've got a kid, a young person coming to the league with incredible amounts of hype and hope and expectations and excitement, and that, you know, how that works, man. We talked about this yesterday. It's interesting to me how many athletes in the WNBA don't seem to be embracing this, rather laying down gauntlets. But then you got to remind yourself, that's what athletes do. It would be no different if we were talking about the NBA. So even though I think I was of the mindset yesterday that, come on, at least show some appreciation for the eyeballs she is bringing your sport, that's not the way athletes think.
No.
Athletes are there to win basketball games, football, whatever. So it's I'm amending my original opinion on this. I still find it a little bit odd what this kind of smoke that came out of DT, Diana Taurasi, during the Final Four. But I don't think she's alone. I think that there's a natural resentment from people who have not been given the hype and the platform that Caitlin Clark's been given.
How often do we talk about the old heads in the NBA, especially, but all sports, baseball also, when they talk about these young players and how they're not as good as they were, if they would never last if they played in their generation. And whenever there's a super hyped new person coming in, it's resentment. It's being scared of somebody taking your spot. It's being jealous of the attention they're getting.
And there's the competitiveness. There's a lot of that, and the television ratings speak for themselves. And if you're one of the pioneers of the sport, no matter if you're Sue Bird or Cynthia Cooper or Diana Taurasi, I think that would naturally make you feel something. It would make you feel like, okay, why didn't we get that? Why were we not feted like that? Why were we not celebrated like that?
I think there's a big, that's one of the big reasons why you're hearing that attitude. A lot of it also is going to, I hate to say it, it's going to boil down to the financials. Caitlin Clark, this is very well publicized now, in her rookie contract is going to make in salary $76,535.
Yep. And year two, she's going to make $78,000. Year three, $85,000.
Yeah. A max contract in the WNBA is
plus
still
the living range.
But guess what? Those numbers, if this works, and I still have to say if, because the television networks are all in on Caitlin Clark, 36 of 40 games will be on national television for a team that hasn't made the playoffs since 2016. That's a long time in a small league. They are going all in. If this works out, that number is going to grow exponentially. And then the players that are like, Caitlin Clark, and she's going to struggle, they better hope she doesn't struggle.
Oh, the Tiger Woods effect it could have.
Everybody should hope that has an interest in the WNBA should be rooting for her to knock this out of the park.
That is 100% accurate. I think she's going to do just fine because she's an incredibly gifted passer. And I think that plus the deep long range shooting that she can obviously do, I don't think there's going to be a flop here. I don't think there's going to be people going, see, she's nothing in this game. You can't even notice her on a court in the W. I don't think that's going to...
Who was saying that, though? Was anyone saying that? That we wouldn't notice her on the court in the W?
No, no, okay. No, not that. But for people using the word reality check, well, how do you interpret that?
Yeah.
I don't think reality check means you disappear. I just think it doesn't mean that you're going to drop 40 every night.
Yeah. Well, and I don't. Yeah. And I would hope the expectations weren't that she would.
I think for the new fans, that is the expectation because they don't quite understand the scope of the game that she's entering. I do think you are spot on about her passing ability. She is, she has Aaliyah Boston just waiting for her under the basket. She will be totally fine there. But are we going to expect her to hit logo threes every, you know, every time down the court?
Yes. No, I'm not saying that. I am, but that is what fans are going to expect because that's how a lot of fans
about
what highlights
what the reality will be.
Right. And I think,
and that's not a negative thing.
No,
she's just entering a pro league.
But there hasn't been a female player who is kind of gone the Steph Curry right now. Diana, during her prime, was great at pull up deep threes, but not the range that Caitlin Clark has shown. And I think Caitlin Clark has kind of tapped into that Steph Curry phenomenon. That this is a different kind of superstar. This is not an around the rim kind of superstar. This is a way deep kind of superstar. And again, there's a lot of relatability to that. If you are a young athlete who was not gifted with size or verticality or leaping ability, you see that and you go, there is a path for me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very powerful.
And that path is 40 feet from the hoop.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
But I mean, look at Steph Curry. Look at the impact he had. It's almost the same thing. It's almost the same skill set kind of appeal. So I'm real excited to see it. For her to land in Indiana of all places, that almost feels fixed to me.
I think it's over 17,000 people for a viewing party for the draft. Mm-hmm. Her jersey on Fanatics sold out within an hour.
Yeah, in every single size except for small. So if you wear a size small jersey, there is still hope for you today.
That's interesting.
Her boyfriend also transferred to Butler. He plays college basketball. He is now going to be in Indianapolis.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So that transfer portal really came in handy, didn't it?
I saw that earlier this morning. Yeah.
So we mentioned that she was on SNL this week.
Yes.
Caitlin Clark. And we talked about the budding potential Diana Taurasi rivalry. I just want to play a quick clip. This is the end of it.
I know exactly what you're going
to
play.
And just tell me if something stands out to you here.
Yeah, no problem. And good luck in the WNBA. I hope you have a great first season.
Thanks. I'm sure it will be a big first step for me. But it's just one step for the WNBA. Thanks to all the great players like Cheryl Swoops, Lisa Leslie, Cynthia Cooper, the great Dawn Staley, and my basketball hero, Maya Moore. These are the women that kicked down the door so I could walk inside.
Ooh. Okay.
glaring omission.
I do
right
not
there.
Watch Saturday Night Live, so that's the first time I've heard that. That's quite an omission, isn't it?
Well, she omitted every.
Well, I mean, she omitted a lot.
None of those are current players.
Smoke for smoke, man.
But to omit the person who is considered by a lot as the greatest player ever is just, I thought.
That's pretty undisputed. I'm sorry. Diana Taurasi as the GOAT is pretty much undisputed.
Maybe noticed it because we're in
a
Phoenix.
A lot of people noticed it, but. Yeah. Competition goes both ways. If Diana Taurasi is saying, hey, it's going to be a rough adjustment, you're coming into a pro league now, why can't Caitlin Clark? Why is she going to tip her cap to somebody she's going to be competing against?
No, that's right. And so smoke for smoke.
Yeah.
Sign me up.
What's that date? June 30th, the fever are in town?
Ooh, I think the 27th.
I got a fever.
And the only prescription is
more cowbell. You boys, you're going to need more cowbell.
But I'm done with you. You're going to be wearing gold-plated diapers.
You are
the
correct.
What does that mean?
It is June 30th in Phoenix and then twice in Indianapolis in July and August.
What are the chances they move that game to State Farm Stadium?
No.
Coming up next, WNBA draft is over. The NFL draft coming up next week, and there seems to be some growing speculation on what that team at number 3, the New England Patriots, are going to do. We'll get into all the possibilities next. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.